Hello and welcome to the AFPAC File, a bi-weekly joint podcast of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and the Wilson Center focusing on Pakistan in Afghanistan. I am Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. This is the second edition of AFPAC File podcast, and today we are here to discuss Pakistan's current economic challenges and the way forward for Prime Minister Imran Khan as he has faced an uphill battle with the limited options and race against the clock. The question is just how bad is his economic challenges? What are Mr. Khan's options and what those options might mean for his political future? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Khurram Hussain, business editor for Pakistan's Dawn newspaper in Karachi, Michael Kugelman, deputy director of the Wilson Center South Asia program in Washington, D.C. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Very nice to have you. So let's get after it, Khurram. Everyone seems to be very worried about Pakistan's economy these days. I wonder just how bad is this?
It's not so bad that people should be very worried, Mohammed. However, there are some growing and very steep challenges. The situation is nowhere near as bad as we saw in 2008, for instance. And it's also certainly not as bad as the situation that was there in 2013. But it is moving in that direction. And at the very heart of this movement are two deficits that are continuing to grow. One is the external deficit, or what we call the current account deficit, which is driven mostly by the trade deficit that Pakistan has been consistently running. And the other is the fiscal deficit between revenues and expenditures. So in both cases, the government has some very difficult choices that need to be made in order to first arrest this problem and then slowly reverse it.
I hope Michael and we will understand these terms going forward during the discussion. So, Michael, what's your thought about the economy of Pakistan the way it stands today?
Well, I mean, several thoughts. I think Khurram is right to bring some important context here that it's not the necessarily, an unprecedentedly bad situation. It's been worse before. But, you know, these types of problems that we're talking about are not new. I mean, these are the same types of economic challenges that Pakistan has faced for a number of years, particularly the balance of payment crisis and that type of thing. This is always there. And, you know, I think that there certainly is a view, which I subscribe to, that the interventions and the policies that Pakistan has tried to use in the past to address these never-changing challenges have not worked. And in that regard, you know, you need to try something new. And, you know, this new government has been talking about how it's, you know, going to do things differently. It's going to be breaking with the past in many new ways. Remains to be seen if it follows through on that. But I think there is something to be said for having fresh thinking, innovative ideas to deal with these longstanding problems. But again, you know, to the extent that we've heard so far from this government about how exactly it plans to deal with the economy, you know, we're hearing some rather unusual and rather unorthodox solutions, which we can talk about. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's important to remember that this is an untested prime minister, an untested party that's never held national power. And certainly you have a number of folks, particularly on the econ finance side, who know what they're doing and very well qualified to do so. But it's a big challenge because this is a government that's facing a major economic challenge that has never had to deal with this type of problem before because it's never held national power before.
You know, looking into Pakistan, these challenges might not be new, but expectation seems to be very high. Especially given by Imran Khan's promises during the election time, I think one of them was to create a Medina-like welfare state. I don't know what does really this mean. So how people are responding to this, Khurram? Tell me about talk in the streets in the economic hub of Pakistan, where you are, Karachi.
Well, that depends on who you're speaking to. People in the financial sector, for instance, are waiting for a clear policy direction regarding the foreign exchange reserves because they and their work is heavily impacted by the movements in the foreign currency reserves. Many people in the trader community are very keenly watching the exchange rate. And we know that there is growing anticipation of further depreciations in the value of the rupee. And they are adjusting and they're trying to see how they can best protect their own business interests because their work is heavily tied in with the exchange rate. Your average person, what you might call, let's say, the man on the street, is mostly worried about household expenditures. So the government has just passed, or at least approved in principle, a massive hike in the price of gas, natural gas. And now what's on their table is an equally large hike in power tariffs to try and address the circular debt and the growing liquidity issues of the power sector. So these are going to very negatively impact household finances. And so there's a great deal of concern. I think together what all of this adds up to is that this government has to undertake certain adjustments that are rather unpleasant and that have very negative consequences for investors, for traders, for the business community, as well as for the man on the street. And that is when they actually begin to administer that adjustment, when they actually get going with it, that is the moment when their popularity is going to be tested. It's going to be put to a very, very serious test, because in the past, we have seen that whenever governments undertake these kinds of adjustments, that's the moment when popular opinion turns against them and the opposition finds its voice. And people basically start saying that you came in promising change, but you have ended up delivering the same thing and you've ended up looking exactly like your predecessor. So that key test is still in the future. But it's drawing nearer, and I think the government is trying to postpone it, but they cannot put it off indefinitely.
Just to follow up on this, you mentioned two times at least. Now it is controllable, manageable, but we are getting near to some problematic area, correct?
Yes.
What do you have in mind when you say that?
What I'm saying is that the kind of direction in which the economy is currently moving with the growing deficits, if that direction is not changed, and change within, you know, we don't have an indefinite period of time. If it's not changed in a period of months, then this situation can lead into an economic crisis. And I mean, in the past, we have seen that such crises can effectively shut down important markets in the country, markets such as power market, which is not really a market as such, but the liquidity of the power sector can reach a point that it actually results in closure of power plants, or it can start shutting down the financial market like it did in 2008. So to avoid that situation, it's very important to arrest this drift towards crisis at this point.
Michael, your thought on this?
Yeah, I just really echo what Coram has to say here, that, you know, I don't want to say that the government is in a honeymoon period now. I think it's already faced a number of challenges already. But, you know, it's at a point where it hasn't really had to come through and indicate what exactly it's going to do. I mean, to the extent that it's announced new initiatives on the economic front, and they've been fairly populist in nature. You know, one of the big emphases that we've heard from the government to this point is that it's going to make every possible effort to recover all of this offshore wealth, which of course has been something that this that the PTI has been talking about doing, wanting to do for years. So yes, I mean, you could argue, okay, you want to try to recover all this wealth. If you get it back, that would help. But obviously, that's not going to solve the broader economic problems if you even manage to succeed in getting back all that offshore wealth. And then there have been these efforts to try to crowdfund the diaspora and try to get Pakistanis around the world to start contributing to the Pakistani economy by paying for a new dam and things like that. Again, it may play well politically among some elements of the PTI base, but that's not going to solve the problem. So once you get to the point where, you know, coming up with those types of unconventional ideas no longer works, and you have to sort of move beyond that and make a big push and figure out how, for example, you're going to deal with the realities that you simply don't have competitive exports or exports that can't compete with textile exports from the likes of India, Bangladesh, and China. You know, once you get to that question, you know, that's where we'll really find out what this this government is able to do. And that's where, you know, it could start to become politically vulnerable if it seems like it's not going to be able to move forward. And I think that we're not there yet, but we will be soon, particularly because, you know, the macroeconomic indicators, as was mentioned before, are troubling. They're not bad in an unprecedented sense, but so, the balance of payment crisis is not getting any better.
So what would be the indication that we are there, the point that you are talking about, this trouble area?
It's hard to pinpoint exactly what or when could prompt that realization. But if we come to a time where it's clear that you know, economic indicators are not improving, you know, if the balance of payment crisis continues, if the inflows of assistance from the likes of the Chinese and the Saudis are not coming in there, then, you know, I think Pakistan will need to make some pretty significant decisions. One, which I don't think we brought up yet, is the question as to whether the government goes to the International Monetary Fund for another bailout. And that's something that I think the government really, for political reasons, wants to avoid, because, as I think you mentioned, Mohammed, this, you know, Imran Khan has talked about wanting to create an Islamic welfare system in Pakistan. Well, if you want to do that, then going to one of the preeminent Western financial institutions for a financial bailout is not going to play very well. That doesn't look very good. So I think maybe the best way to answer your question is once you get to a point where the government has to address a very key question, that being what's the best way to deal with its immediate economic problems, do you go to the IMF or not? That's where I think that you could start, you know, that could be a triggering point. But Khurram may have more perspectives than me as to how likely it is that we could see the government going to the IMF. I imagine it's inevitable. It's a matter of when, not if. But he may have other thoughts.
Yeah, I do agree with Michael. It's a matter of when, not if. Just I think the jury's out on how long they can actually drag the status quo out before making up their minds. But Mohammed, also coming back to your earlier question of what might things look like if we were to enter into a crisis-like situation. Well, in the past, a few things that have always characterized such economic crises. One, for instance, is a rapid dollarization in the economy, where people are unwilling to keep their savings in rupees and start buying dollars. So there's panic buying of dollars, panic remittance of dollars out of the country, because there's fear that foreign currency accounts might get frozen like they did 20 years ago. And there's also speculative pressures breaking out in the exchange rate in the on the foreign currency markets as well. And, you know, then you have formation of black markets where dollars can be sold on the street for a lot more than what is the advertised price. And also, we've also seen situations in the past where the inability of the government to carry the bills of the power sector results in power plants being shut down and widespread load shedding and blackouts begin to take place. So that's something that happened in 2013 when major urban areas began seeing up to 20-hour long blackouts. That situation didn't last very long, but you know, those people who lived through it obviously were eager to get out of that situation very quick. That's a near crisis-like point, so closure of power plants or panic breakout in exchange rate markets. There are others as well.
That's a really scary picture that you are painting. So this is the situation. Economy is not doing really well. Country is kind of isolated these days, and this economy needs a quick fix. So how much of time Imran Khan got to fix it, and what are his options? We will continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the AFPAC file. I'm joined by Khurram Hussain, business editor for Pakistan's prominent Dawn newspaper in Karachi. Khurram is also a former Pakistan fellow at the Wilson Center. Michael Kugelman is joining us from the Wilson Center. He's deputy director of the Center's South Asia program. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the AFPAC file, also here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing Pakistan's economic challenges and way forward for Imran Khan. So, yes, we got it. These are challenging times, Michael, and there are numerous reasons possibly behind it. But the thing is, it has to be fixed. How much of time does Imran Khan has to fix it?
Well, I mean, the question is, does it need to be fixed? You know, I think that as we were discussing earlier, Pakistan has been able to...
Then think about those scary pictures that Khurram was painting.
Right. No, no, I see your point. My point I was trying to make was simply that Pakistan has been able to muddle through a lot of these economic problems in the past, and theoretically it could hope to do so now. But you're right. I mean, Khurram has put out some very troubling scenarios there about power plant closures and things like that. And certainly when you start talking about those scenarios, you start worrying about broader stability concerns, which is certainly a concern here in Washington, where, you know, whenever there's thinking about Pakistan, the question is this issue of stability. You know, I think it's tough because they're quick fixes and they're less quick fixes. I think the IMF theoretically could be a quick fix, but the negotiations would probably be a bit difficult, given that the IMF, with perhaps pressure from the U.S., would try to put more conditions on Pakistan than they would ideally like. But I think you know, the CPEC issue is another big factor, the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. I mean, according to the Pakistani state, the previous government in Pakistan, and also I think in the view of the army, you know, these CPEC projects will go a long way toward addressing a lot of these underlying economic challenges that Pakistan faces, ranging from putting more electricity on the grid to strengthening infrastructure to, you know, many other things. Now, of course, CPEC has become a major point of debate for this new government, as in its early days, the government has suggested that it could try to subject these CPEC-related deals to more scrutiny and perhaps even slow down the process. And I think for the real powers that be in Pakistan, that may not be a welcome messaging, because they really want to move forward on this. So I think that, you know, CPEC could be one way forward. If the projects actually work, I mean, if things work out in the way that the Chinese and the Pakistanis want them to, you know, that could go a long way toward improving the power situation. I think it's these things have come into a bit of doubt now that it's unclear as to whether Pakistan's going to want to continue to move forward with the deals as they're currently structured because of concerns about financing. But even if you do see CPEC, I think you need to look at broader necessary fixes that will be politically unpopular. But if Pakistan really wants to move forward with these long-standing economic challenges, it will need to address them. One is expanding the tax base. We've heard about this for years. You know, this new government has sent signals that it wants to move forward, but there are a number of entrenched interests that could try to push back against that idea. Trying to improve the agricultural industry. Agriculture is one of the biggest contributors to the economy in Pakistan, but you have a lot of problems, a lot of inefficiencies. You have water shortages that make it very difficult for the industry to be effective. More broadly, water shortages are a big concern. I think there's going to be a big need to figure out what to do about that problem. And building a large dam won't solve the problem on its own.
Even if the government goes into this direction, but it's not a quick fix, right? It's a long-term solution that you are talking about in terms of irrigations and agriculture. So let me get back to you on that, Michael. But before I want to take Khurram's point. Khurram, about the timing, let me put it in a different way. How much time people that you interact with in Karachi or elsewhere are prepared to give to Imran Khan to start fixing some of the problems that people are facing in terms of economy?
Well, that depends again on who you speak. Those people who are heavily invested in the financial markets want to see action very, very soon. But many of those who voted for Imran Khan and believe in his message of change are willing to give him much, much longer. Imran Khan himself has said, give me at least 100 days before you start criticizing, because he's saying that it's going to take his government that long to find their feet and sort of establish their position. So he's got a difficult job ahead of him, because the kind of promises that his party made in the run-up to elections have raised expectations very, very high, and he's not going to be able to deliver on the full menu that he offered. So at some point, you know, the so-called honeymoon period will have to end, and they will move from being a new government to being a government that is now firmly in the saddle and firmly in place. And the more hardcore supporters will continue, I think, giving them that giving them time. But I think very soon now, we're approaching the mark where they are going to have to start answering for the kind of decisions that they are making.
Yeah, Michael, earlier you were talking about Imran Khan's options and IMF being one of them. But a couple of days ago, I heard Secretary Pompeo saying, in fact, threatening IMF not to come for Pakistan's help. I know U.S. does not have the dictation power over how IMF does its planning, but given the size of its contribution, Washington certainly has an influence on how IMF's decisions are made. So talking about the options, where does this situation put Pakistan in terms of the types of fix we are talking about today?
Well, you know, I think in conversations I've had with those close to the PTI, there clearly, at least initially, had been a desire to sort of push the IMF issue to the background and try other things first, just because, you know, as I noted before, you know, it wouldn't necessarily play well politically for this new government to go to the IMF. I mean, it never does. But I think that, you know, in the absence of other better or effective policies to suggest that the country can deal with its immediate economic challenges, I don't think there's any way around it. Now, of course, you know, if Pakistan does go to the IMF once again, you know, there would be expectations from the fund as to what Pakistan would need to do in order to get this money. And it would be some of these difficult measures that it's been asked to do in the past, you know, like privatize certain public companies and things like that. Areas where Pakistan has been asked to act before and hasn't really necessarily done what it's expected to do, even though it's gotten the money. So, you know, that would be tough. But again, I just don't see, you know, I'm not an economist. I would defer to Khorram on this. I just don't see any other viable short-term measure that Pakistan could take other than going to the IMF. I know that you know, there was hopes of getting some short infusions of funds from the Chinese and also the Saudis and perhaps some other key partners of the Pakistanis. But my sense is that if those asks have been made, you know, there hasn't been delivery, so to speak. I mean, the requisite inflow of funds to, you know, narrow this gap, this immediate gap in the imbalance of payments, it's not there. So I think it's going to happen eventually. And I don't really think there is any other immediate term option that it can do. It can only wait for so long.
Khorram, what's thinking in the PTI line? I mean, if they are not going towards IMF, then what? Then where they are hoping to get this money?
Well, you know, Mohammed, when they first came to power, they used to talk of the IMF as one of many options that is available. So they spoke of leveraging friendly relations with other countries, but they also spoke heavily about Imran Khan's personal goodwill amongst overseas Pakistanis, particularly. And they seem to be under the impression that an appeal for funds coming from Imran Khan will result in a large influx of money from abroad. And they also used to talk about going after money stolen by political figures belonging to previous regimes that has been parked in accounts abroad. So recovering stolen money from other countries and bringing that money back was also presented by them as one possible way to address the country's growing external sector deficit. Now, lately, what we've noticed is that they've in fact stopped talking about the recovering looted money, except purely as a punitive measure. They've stopped presenting that as some kind of a solution to the growing external trade deficit. They've also issued an appeal to overseas Pakistanis that drew a very tepid response. So I think even over there, they've now backed away from talking constantly about the overseas Pakistanis and the goodwill enjoyed by Imran Khan. So now we're down to basically talks with Saudi Arabia, talks with China, and eventually talks with the IMF. Lately, we heard a bit about oil facility that may be extended by Saudi Arabia. But as of today, when there's a visit to Saudi Arabia has already been completed by the at the level of the prime minister, the foreign minister, and the finance minister. And today, when a delegation from Saudi Arabia is in the country talking about various things, the government appears to be backing away from that as well. So even if there is going to be some kind of a Saudi oil facility, it's probably not going to be as large as what they may have originally envisaged. So one by one, all the other options are beginning to fall off the table.
Yeah, you know, I was looking into Saudi involvement recently, especially they are talking about Saudi joining as a third member of the CPEC. That would take Saudi Arabia to Gwadar. Gwadar is next to Iran. What kind of signal Iran might be getting from this cooperation, and what does this really mean in terms of Pakistan and Iranian relations going forward? Khorram, do you want to continue?
Well, Pakistani-Iranian relations are deeply, deeply complicated. By various factors. One of those is, of course, Pakistan's closeness with Saudi Arabia. The other is Iran's own difficulties and troubles with the United States. And so that impacts tremendously how much Pakistan can actually grow its own ties with Iran. There is clearly a desire and a willingness on the part of the leadership in Pakistan to grow their ties with Iran. But I think they're going to have a very difficult time trying to find the road forward in pursuing that objective until at least American sanctions are either loosened or removed, or until Saudi Arabia begins to reduce its own apprehensions about Iran's role in the region. We know that this government again came in speaking of the possibility of Imran Khan again using his stature and using his popularity as a base. They actually offered mediation between Saudi Arabia and Iran, but that offer has not really been taken up.
Okay, Michael, earlier you were hinting towards the China option. You know, occasionally I also see Pakistani officials talking to Russia on various issues. But on China option, and it's certainly a source of irritation here in Washington, and it looks like listening to Sheikh Rashid kind of people, it's also a source of irritation even in the locally on the ground. So what do you see? How much of role that China can play in resolving some of the issues that we were talking about?
Well, I mean, given the status that China has in Pakistan, it's probably what Pakistan would regard as one of its closest friends, mm-hmm. even though it certainly would admit that it's not a tension-free relationship, despite mm-hmm. all the public rhetoric. So China clearly will play a role. So long as CPEC continues, China will inherently play a major role in trying to help address Pakistan's economic challenges. But, you know, I think that I think you had mentioned before that Pakistan, you know, faces isolation. I actually don't agree with that in the context of the economy. So long as CPEC is there, you know, that keeps Pakistan integrated into the regional economy on some levels. And as you noted before, you know, there also are the Saudis. Russia is becoming closer to Pakistan. I wouldn't overstate the closeness of that relationship yet. So there are options. But, you know, in terms of this news about Saudi Arabia possibly joining CPEC, you know, it's never been clear to me when you hear this talk about a certain country joining or participating in CPEC. It's never clear to me what exactly that means. And we've heard this on a lot of examples of this. We've heard that Iran may be interested in joining. We've heard that Turkey may be interested in joining. Russia, what does that really mean? But I do think it's true that Iran cannot be forgotten in the context of Pakistan's economic story. I think that it's quite clear that in the last government, the PMLN-led government, you know, there were efforts to try to draw a bit closer to Iran in an economic context, to try to deepen trade ties, investment. You know, Pakistan is a country that is very concerned about energy security, and Iran certainly has something to provide. But, you know, as Khurram mentioned before, it's complicated, it's dicey, because Saudi Arabia is such a more important player in Pakistan's calculations. And so, you know, if you try to bring Saudi Arabia into the CPEC orbit, that certainly can help boost Saudi-Pakistan relations even more, but that could trouble, that could make Iran very worried, just because we can't overstate this deepening rivalry in the region between the Saudis and the Iranians. So Pakistan has options, and it's important to look at the regional environment when you're looking at its economic challenges. It certainly has friends that it can look to. But how it balances, how it tries to strike a balance between, you know, working with these different types of partners, particularly when in the case of Iran and Saudi Arabia, they really don't get along. That, you know, that remains how to be seen how that's going to continue moving forward, for sure.
Yeah, let's forward, Michael, your question to Khurram. Khurram, there are lots of talks about Saudi partnership in CPEC. How does this really looks like on the ground, or how is this even envisioned going forward?
From what I understand, there is no Saudi participation in CPEC at the moment. Nor does it seem like the Saudis are particularly interested. That was basically an announcement we heard from the government of Pakistan. We never heard the Saudis actually say anything about. So whether or not there's any Saudi Arabian interest in getting involved in any CPEC projects, that's something that remains to be seen. I myself am very skeptical that there's going to be any substantial involvement.
Uh-huh. So we understood that the expectations from overseas Pakistanis are not coming through. The return of, let's say, looted money parked in the foreign banks are not coming back either. The price tag for IMF loan is so high that PTI doesn't want to choose destruction. Saudis are not coming with dollars, so Pakistan is left with China, which has its own way of financial dealings. And I believe Pakistan already owes so much to Beijing. And on the top of that, Imran Khan needs to deliver, and people are looking for quick fixes. So what's the realistic way forward for Imran Khan, or solution to his challenges?
Well, I think that's part of the problem. I don't think there is any sort of, there's no silver bullets. And I think there's no practical solution or a solution that could actually work given political obstacles, political constraints. I think that, you know, the new government will have to hold its nose, so to speak, and go to the IMF and, you know, get that loan to give it a bit of a buffer as it tries to sort of think through how to deal with the broader economic challenges, because, you know, the things talked about earlier, expanding the tax base, dealing with water shortages, obviously that's not something that you can deal with. That's going to take years or months at the least to deal with. So I think that the IMF option is really the only one to look at. I definitely disagree with this idea that at least initially had been put out there by the PTI, that if you just recover all of this illegal offshore wealth, then the economy will be strengthened in a big way. I don't know the numbers as to exactly how much of that misbegotten wealth is out there. But as I said before, you know, actually the process of recovering that is not easy and straightforward. That would take time. And even if you do get that money, you're still going to have the broader problems, just in terms of a lack of money, but also what to do about these faulty economic and fiscal policies that have failed for so many years. It's going to take a lot of time to think that through. So that's why I think that the IMF route, despite the perhaps the short-term political blow it could deal to the PTI, to the government, I think that's what we're going to see, whether it's a few weeks or a few days or a few months, I don't know, but I think it's just a matter of time.
So what's that political blow you're thinking of?
Well, I mean, again, this is a government that has pitched itself as and it's going to be doing things differently. And it's talked about trying to wean itself off dependence on the West. And, you know, you use the term, I think, Islamic welfare system. That's what the prime minister has said. I believe it was in the first speech he made after the election. He said, we're going to move toward that system. Now, you go to the IMF, which is always somewhat of a dicey political move for Pakistan. But if you do that as a government that, again, has said that it's going to become an Islamic welfare system, I don't know, Islamic welfare, whatever that means exactly, I imagine that what is not envisioned in that type of context is going to the IMF, again, one of the major preeminent financial institutions in the West, and asking for a bailout. So I think that'll deliver a blow in that sense. But I'm sure the government would try to figure out a way to spin it appropriately. And, you know, given the, for lack of a better term, the cult of personality effect with the prime minister, I think that his core support base, will be behind him regardless of what he does, even if it seems to go beyond what he has promised to do.
Also talking about the solution, he's taking various measures. I think he was putting some government-owned properties, cars or helicopters on sale. Khurram, is this something, they look into this something of serious step towards the solution of the problem?
I think they initially thought that these could be the solution, but very quickly realized that, that the impact of these acts is going to be very minimal. But now they present them basically as optics. They say that this is a way of signaling to people that your money, whatever money, whether you donate or whether you contribute in any way, or whether through taxes or any other way, is not going to be wasted. And this Prime Minister Imran Khan is very keen to project an image of himself as a humble person who is keen to serve the country. And part of that image is leading as austere lifestyle as is possible, so as to discourage waste everywhere. But I think by now it's pretty clear that steps are mostly for optical purposes, to signal to the public about the government's intention. And they are not designed as measures that will actually or bring in resources on a scale enough to bridge the kind of deficits the economy is in.
Either populist slogans or maybe real measures. But looking into some of the steps that we have been talking about, it also makes me to think that whether the team that Imran Khan put together to deal with the economy, are they up to task?
It's hard to say. I think the jury is still out. I mean, clearly, you know, the finance minister, Asad Umar, is someone who had a very successful career in the private sector before he went into politics and joined PTI. And I do think some of these committees that have been established with this new government to look at economic concerns, I mean, there's some good folks in them. And, you know, I should say that that Ishrat Hussain, who's the advisor on institutional reform, you know, he literally has written the book on institutional reform. In fact, he wrote the book here at the Wilson Center as a public policy fellow not too long ago. You know, institutional reforms are something that everyone has been talking about for a long time. If you want the economy to work better, the economic institutions have to work better. That's a very bold, ambitious, complicated objective, But I do know that Ishrat Hussein is someone who really thinks seriously about that and is genuinely interested in moving forward and figuring out how to get the buy-in from the various stakeholders. So he's heading a new committee on institutional reform. So I think that's good. But again, go back to what I said right at the start. You know, this is completely new terrain for this government. It's run a province. It's run Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province before to mixed reviews, but it's never had the much more complicated goal of running the the national government, including economic policy for a country of 200 million people. So it's a tall order.
Yeah, it is. And also, it's too early to talk about the outcome of any strategy they might have in mind. But I think we should be also wrapping up the discussion now. So just the final points here. So, Khurram, whatever strategy Imran Khan or his team has in mind in terms of dealing with the economy, so what would explain that this strategy is working?
I mean, where economic policy is concerned, the proof is actually not difficult to find. Either the money is there or it's not. So the kind of strategy that they have to follow, they actually have to now start bridging those deficits. And if we see revenues beginning to increase, if we see new tax lines coming in, if we see more tax filers at the end of tax season this year, if we see these things, we can say that, yes, the strategy is paying off. And likewise with the external sector, if we see the trade deficit shrinking, if we see exports continuing to increase, if the import growth being curbed, or remittances increasing, the current account deficit begin to reduce rather than increase. Because for almost 2 years now, its path has been increasing. So if in the next few months they can at least arrest that increase and then start reducing it, we can say, yes, the strategy is beginning to work.
Michael, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll be brief. I agree with Khurram in terms of what we have to look for. But again, just to provide some further additional political context here, the political climate in Pakistan now is very fraught, and it has been for quite some time. But, particularly now, given how the PMLN now in the opposition and the PTI have bickered for so long, I think a big question, if the government is really to move forward and get these types of results that it wants to get and that would need to happen in order for us to say, okay, things are moving forward, that's going to involve working with the opposition. The coalition government is much stronger than many would have expected because the PTI did better in the election than many had suggested. But still, there's an opposition to deal with. The PMLN is now leading the opposition, and it may try to serve as an obstacle in some cases. So, this is not going to be easy. And I know that the government realizes it's not going to be easy. But not only do you have to deal with these very complicated economic challenges, but you have to deal with the very fraught domestic political environment that's going to make things even more of a challenge to move forward.
Yeah, okay. Michael Kugelman, Deputy Director of the Wilson Center South Asia Program, and Khurram Hussain, Business Editor for Pakistan's prominent Dawn newspaper. Thank you very much for your time and thoughts today.
Okay, thank you very much, Mohammed.
Thank you. It was great have you.
Thank you.
This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the AFPAC File, joint podcast of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and the Wilson Center. Please join us in the next discussion in 2 weeks. Until then, bye-bye.